Good morning, it's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Coming up in just a couple minutes, we'll talk with the Long Beach man who won the International Paper Airplane Flying Competition. His went the farthest of anybody. We'll find out about how he did it coming up in just a few minutes. But first, also in the field of science and technology, potentially new type of plastic that could significantly aid recyclability. As we talked about last week on Air Talk, the market for recycling plastics has gotten very constrained and very difficult because of the challenges of taking plastic out of consumer products and reusing it. Very difficult to get the percentages of recycling that we ideally would like. But what if a new type of plastic could help solve that problem? With us is Brett Helms, staff scientist at the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory in Northern California. He directed the study. Brett, thank you so much for being with us.
Happy to be here with you.
So first, let's talk about the challenge of recyclability. Why is it so hard to pull plastic out of products and to reuse it?
Yeah, that's a great question. So plastics were really never designed to be recycled. We use them as barrier materials to hold our food, to, you know, move water through our pipes. You know, you're using them for their reliability. And so that's presented some challenges for the recycling industry, given how much we use plastics and how much plastics we make in the products today. So the types of plastics that we make in our group is intended as a counterpoint to the plastics that we've had for the last 100 years. And what we've done is essentially redesign their chemistry so that you can revert them back into the chemicals that they originally came from. And we can do that without them losing any of the quality in terms of the purity or manufacturability. And I think that's why a lot of people have gotten excited by the platform, particularly in the sustainability community where alternatives to the existing plastics are fairly desirable.
Only about 10% of currently used plastics end up getting recycled. Explain to us the process. How do you, so let's say you take, you have a bottle or some other consumer product made out of this form of plastic you've developed in the laboratory. How do you separate that out in a cleaner way than current plastics?
Yeah, that's a great question. So once you manufacture plastics into a product, typically what goes into them in addition to just the plastic are things like, you know, pigments, because I want a specific color to my bottle. And maybe even there's a label on the plastic bottle as well that might be a different kind of plastic. So that complicates things because now we have to separate out the different plastics during the recycling process. But we also have to recover our plastic and separate out all of those pigments that might have been incorporated during the compounding step and eventually the manufacturing step. So what we do with our plastics is we embrace that, you know, product designers and brands are going to want those attributes to have their products be recognizable in the marketplace. But our chemistry allows you to essentially take that plastic bottle and put it into a simple solution of water with acid, and the polymer breaks down into its original bits and pieces, its original building blocks. Once it's in that stage, we are able to effectively separate out any of the additives that might have been added that includes plasticizers or any of the inks that might have been added, again, for color or appearance. And we can separate those out and isolate just our building blocks. And we can also give you those inks or any of those additives back at the same time. And so this process essentially closes the loop on recycling in a very circular way. And it does so uniquely. Again, none of the plastics in use today, maybe with the exception of polyethylene terephthalate, are able to capture the circularity at the chemical level, but also be able to offer any of these, you know, advantageous things like decoloration and decompounding at the recycling end.
Brett, if you were to try and put this into wide-scale usage, what would the cost be involved in retrofitting recycling plants for this, or would they have to be retrofit, or for manufacturers to substitute the current types of plastics used for this one developed in your lab?
Yeah, so most recycling facilities sort plastics on the basis of a chemical signature that's detectable by the infrared. And so our plastics actually have a unique chemical signature and might actually be able to be sorted as you would any of the other plastics at the level of the MRFs, the municipal recycling facilities. I think once they get sorted and binned appropriately, then those would go off to a separate entity for processing.
And would that have to be a new type of facility, or could current processing facilities do this?
Yeah, I think that current processing facilities could do this very simply because, you know, you would only need to have a vat that was capable of housing both the plastic intended to be recycled as well as this acidic water that is used to degrade the plastic material.
So it's so simple, you could potentially do this anywhere, it sounds like.
Yeah, I think a distributed approach to waste processing is something that we can look forward to in terms of how the recycling infrastructure is likely to evolve in this country. So I think that if we can, you know, put our plastic into such facilities or even advise on how such facilities might be constructed in the future, then I think it's a win-win situation for everyone.
We're talking with Brett Helms. He's the lead scientist on this study from the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory, where he staffs scientists about a new form of plastic which can much more easily be separated from other ingredients into a consumer product made primarily of plastic, and then it could, in a very clean way, be recycled to future consumer products. Are there barriers to industry starting to use this plastic, and what are those, Brett?
Yeah, so since our initial disclosure of the platform technology, we've gotten a lot of interest from various sectors that use plastics, both in, you know, packaging for food and beverage, as well as in, you know, things as simple like plastic water bottles and shopping bags. And I think that you'll also continue to see, you know, the textile industry where synthetic fibers are also integrated with natural fibers, and that also complicates recycling because now there's several types of materials present. So I think for apparel and footwear, packaging for food and beverage, I think that we're going to see a lot of interested partners to build here. I think that the main sort of next area that we need to focus on is how to tailor the plastic for these specific applications. And I think that that's going to come through these partnerships with these stakeholders in these various industries.
Have you named this new plastic?
The plastic is named PDKs. It's a kind of an organic chemistry name that is best simplified by the acronym.
Yeah, you need a sexier, consumer-friendly name for that.
Exactly, exactly. But the full name, if anyone is interested, is a polydiketoenamine.
So, of course. All right. Hey, thank you for being with us, talking about it. I know it's difficult to predict how soon something like this could be adopted into consumer application. But it certainly sounds very promising while in your laboratory. Brett Helms, Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory in the Bay Area, thank you very much. Appreciate your being with us.
Thanks, Larry.
You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. Coming up, we're going to find out about the engineering expertise of the farthest thrown paper airplane. The winner is from Long Beach, and he's with us. We'll be back in just 1 minute on Air Talk.